grounds that George Bush relied upon, that irreparable harm would be done to George Bush if the votes were counted.
Uh-huh. Well, at least he didn't say anything about us.
Well, that's because, you know, we don't matter.
Yeah. And what was so aggravating, and people talk about James Baker. He was so heavily involved in that, I just hated to see him come on the TV. Because he was really his spokesman.
I know.
I watched all that stuff. I watched all of that, Clinton impeachment thing. And you couldn't watch TV without that. It was just over and over and over and over again.
Yep, beat you across the head with it.
Everywhere. And, of course, I didn't know that, at the time, I didn't know that Falwell had put out some kind of a little movie.
The Clinton Chronicles.
Yeah. And, he was heavily, he was a drug pen, kingpin.
MENA Airport.
All these murders. And then you had Starr come along, you know, and he invested all that stuff, investigated all
that
stuff.
The whole thing was just we know now from having seen all the scandals that have broken about the Republicans, Juanita, we know what a passion that they have for pornography and filth.
Uh-huh.
And that's all they were interested in, you see. They were getting their prurient kicks by looking around by looking at smut and
did
calling
you read
it government.
My little thing I wrote.
I did.
2006. I read it, believe that. It's kind of like and I can't remember the significance of that date for some reason. I was looking up in my old files for some different things, and I sent you about three different things. But and I thought, that last one I sent you, I thought, he's going to think I'm terrible. But anyway, and you were, I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to let you go.
Yeah, it's news time, so.
I just want to say one more thing.
Sure.
Have you ever wondered if Starr, Ken Starr and McConnell and Rose and who's the guy, the head of the family center? You ever wonder if they're all out of the same bag, so to speak?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what I'm saying?
You know,
they favor.
And there's a lot of rumors going around that eventually Mitch McConnell will be outed.
I can believe it. And his little wife, I could...
Oh, she's just evil.
She's
evil.
Something else, yeah.
Juanita, best of luck as you continue the home repairs, and dial in any time, okay?
Okay, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
For the real Thanksgiving.
Precisely. And even if the turkey's, you know, Chinese.
Right.
All right.
As a friend of mine says, pray over it.
Pray over it, indeed. Take care, Juanita.
Okay, you too.
Bye now. All right. So let's go do some news. What do you say? You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. Independent media, listener supported. The Horn. Chime right in if you've got a bee under your bonnet or a burr under your saddle. Bad for you to keep that stuff bottled up. We'll be back.
Drink my wine. This is the Quality News Network. The U.S. Supreme Court agreeing to hear an appeal by the District of Columbia in favor of the city's existing handgun ban. Justices will review a ruling by a federal appeals court that struck down the D.C. law, saying that it was unconstitutional under the Second Amendment. It's a case that could produce the Supreme Court's first ruling in nearly 70 years concerning an American's right to bear arms. The United Nations is warning that a resurgence of the AIDS epidemic could occur if countries let down their guard. The UN AIDS agency lowering its earlier estimates of how many people are infected with HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. They now say 33 million have the virus, not 40 million. Better methods of collecting data indicate that AIDS is not as prevalent as feared. A resolution in the fight over embryonic stem cell research could be on the horizon. Human skin cells have been transformed into batches of cells that look and act just like embryonic stem cells. Researchers agree it will be years before their new technique called regenerative medicine will be used to treat patients. The world's top diplomats will soon receive a letter from Iran's foreign minister arguing the case for the Iranian nuclear program as peaceful and not a burgeoning atomic threat. The letter was published in Farsi by the Iranian state news agency, insisting that all Iran's nuclear activities are based on the United Nations Nuclear Charter and the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Exclusive invitations have gone out to several top diplomats being asked to attend next week's Middle Eastern Peace Conference in Annapolis, Maryland. Among those invited are leaders Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, and Russian President Vladimir Putin. Iraqi leaders warned private security firms that act outside the law that they will be dealt a firm hand. The Iraqi government opened an investigation into a shooting of a woman in central Baghdad, the latest in a string of incidences using deadly force on Iraqi civilians. And south of Baghdad, a coalition forces helicopter crashed today, killing 2 soldiers and injuring 12. U.S. military officials say the crash was not the result of enemy fire. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll check science and business news just ahead. But first, this message.
You know you can depend on QNN for honest news. Now we want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea on California's beautiful Central Coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple clicks and you're visiting a website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for. Quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, and the best shopping. Charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater. A cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway. Carmel.com.
The crush of working families needing assistance for the holidays has put a strain on the nation's food banks and soup kitchens. An unprecedented scarcity of donations, meaning many groups are canceling Thanksgiving dinners and food baskets. Traditionally, this week is one of the busiest for U.S. air travel. 27 million Americans will fly during the Thanksgiving week. Fog, rain, and snow in the East and Midwest have meant delays at the largest airports from O'Hare to LaGuardia to Atlanta. In France, civil servants, teachers, and hospital staff today joined transit workers on strike at least for 24 hours. The nationwide strike, now in its second week, costing the country an estimated $500 million daily. Bayer Pharmaceutical will invest nearly $1.5 billion in an effort to better protect the environment over the next 3 years. Pollution levels will be more closely audited and more energy-efficient facilities will be built. Hewlett-Packard beat Wall Street expectations by posting a jump in quarterly profit on a 28% increase in net income. Light sweet crude oil trading at $98.03 a barrel, gold at $791.40 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 52 points to end at 13,010, NASDAQ up 3, S&P 500 up 6. And there's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty then. You know that I am following... Well, let's back up a minute. If you were listening to our good friend Guy James earlier today, you know that he made mention of this business of Mike Huckabee. All these little reptilian-brained repiglicans sort of run together. Rick, Mike, George, Frank, Rudy, John, whatever. But if you were listening to Guy James earlier today, you know that he made mention of the story whereby Mike Huckabee, who is in fact an ordained Baptist minister, compared his campaign in Iowa and himself to Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter. Yes, 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 he did. He was asked a question about how he was able to maintain a campaign on as little money as he had been able to raise as compared with the money that, say, Mitt Romney, you know, the guy with the magic underwear who combs his hair with a fork, had made, you know, like $10 million, and there's poor little Mike Huckabee with only a million. Only a million. Remember that. Only. Only a million. And Mike Huckabee went on to describe, he said, well, you know, it's like the miracle of the little boy and the fishes, where you just hope you got enough fishes and biscuits to make them go around, and it's a miracle, or some such tripe as that. And he was immediately called on it, A, because he's supposedly a minister of the gospel, and there he was comparing himself to Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter. And it's not the miracle of the little boy and the fishes. Unless the little boy you're referring to is, you know, again, Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter. And, you know, I find that just repugnant. Now, I am not a participant in any faith that calls itself Christian, because I don't see them as having anything to do with Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter. It's rather like what Gandhi said. I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. They're so unlike your Christ. So, I heard that listening to Guy this afternoon. And if you're not listening to, you know, why don't you just put it on the horn and just leave it go all day? Turn it off when you leave work and turn it on when you get home or whatever. It's certainly better than anything you're going to get on TV, especially with the writer's strike going on. Not that the writers, bless their souls, were actually elevating the American intellect in any recognizable fashion. So, that comparison of the mundane, you know, a filthy political campaign, to a miracle that was allegedly performed 2,000 years ago for people who were lame, blind, sick, suffered from leprosy, you know, the general laundry list of malaise in that hellish part of the world 2,000 years ago. Comparing those two things is just repugnant. And it makes a mockery of the Christianity that somebody like Mike Huckabee claims to profess. Well, I got another one for you. And you know that I am a sports geek. Not all sports. I think if I ever had a chance to really get serious about it, I could enjoy NHL hockey. But I was born and raised in Alabama, and hockey was a noise you made when you had a bad sinus infection. The NFL doesn't do much for me anymore. You know, really, to me, it's the no-fun league. NBA basketball, I'd just as soon have my toenails ripped out as watch. But college football and college basketball, I can, and Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball, I can get real geeky about real quick. And the PGA to a certain extent. And I'm particularly geeked out this year because if my beloved West Virginia Mountaineers, even though they're funded by the Fiends of Coal, it's my alma mater and I have a warm place for them, if they can manage not to screw up between now and the end of their season, which means the coming two Saturdays, both home games against Connecticut and Pitt, they'll finish the season 11-1 and have as legitimate a right as any other team in the country to demand a place in the national championship title game. So I'm pretty excited. And I sit and watch the game sort of, you know, with my, you know how it is when you're expecting disaster and you kind of put the crook of your elbow over your eyes and you peek out from under them. See, if we had video, you'd see me doing this right now. And you kind of peep out. I used to joke that my dad and I watched college bowl games, you know, with blankets over our heads, waiting for disaster to strike our beloved Mountaineers. Well, what's all this got to do with a liberal conversation radio program, you might ask? Well, I'm going to answer. I'll tell you. Because what it has to do is this. I didn't like Mike Huckabee comparing himself to Christ Jesus. And I don't like, and perhaps like even less, a football coach who basically minimizes the horror of September 11th, 2001. If you don't follow college football, you might be hard-pressed to fully grasp what I'm getting at here. And, of course, you know, having been raised in Alabama, I grew up a Crimson Tide fan as well as the West Virginia Mountaineers. My father loathed the University of Alabama. He loved to watch Bear Bryant lose because it was such high tragedy. But I did grow up a Crimson Tide fan. And if there is a more obnoxious set of self-important football fans in this nation, I don't know who it would be. So last year, after a so-so season, the University of Alabama fired its football coach, a man by the name of Mike Shula, and yeah, that means that Shula. He's Don Shula's son. He played quarterback for the Crimson Tide. And he was unceremoniously thrown out on his ear because he hadn't produced a national championship in 4 years, never mind the fact that Alabama had been on probation for various and sundry, you know, dirty deeds done dirt cheap. And the University of Alabama went casting about trying to find a top-shelf football coach who would be guaranteed to bring them back to the glory days of Paul Bear Bryant. That search yielded up one Nick Saban, son of Lou Saban, who had produced a national championship for Louisiana State University and had then basically left that university high and dry and gone off to try his hand in the pro ranks with the Miami Dolphins, where he was a howling non-success. So for the princely sum of something on the order of $28 million, remember, we're talking about a university here. We're talking about an institution whose first mission is supposedly the extended education of young minds. The University of Alabama system and Board of Trustees agreed to pony up $28 million on a 4 or 5 year contract for Nick Saban. Life has not been kind to Nick Saban this season. They lost to LSU. They lost to Mississippi State. They lost to Florida State. A couple of others. And now they are facing Auburn, whom they haven't beaten in 3 or 4 years. And losing to Auburn at Alabama is just about, well, it's on a par with religious heresy. It's right up there. You know, losing, for an Alabama fan, losing to Auburn is right up there with denying Christ. You just can't conceive of it. But the worst came along this past Saturday. I promise, this is going to make sense, even for you people who hate sports. The worst came about this past Saturday when, at Bryant-Denny Stadium in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, the Crimson Tide teed it up against a humble little school from the Sun Belt Conference called the University of Louisiana Monroe. This was supposed to be a mop-up job. This was supposed to be a boat race. But instead, the University of Alabama took its own field, its home field, and proceeded to mail it in and stunk up the joint in front of 92,000 rabid Crimson Tide fans who were so nonplussed by the performance of the University of Alabama football squad that they didn't even wait until the game was over to boo them. They booed them going into the locker room at halftime. By the time the game was over and the final gun sounded and the final score showed on the scoreboard, University of Louisiana Monroe 21, University of Alabama 14. Well, the clock hadn't even ticked down to zero before the University of Alabama Crimson Tide football team left the sidelines and headed for the locker room. Not even so much as a fellowship of Christian athletes meeting on the center of the field and good game, good game, good game. No, they tucked their tails and got their asses booed off the field. I promise, this is going to make sense. Now, to me, I giggled when I saw that, because anybody that spends $4 million on a football coach deserves, somewhere along the way, to have their ass handed to them by the University of Louisiana Monroe, just to sort of keep the natural order of things in the universe in their rightful places. The ancient Greeks identified that concept as hubris. Well, it's not going over very well with the Alabama faithful. I checked out some of the message boards and newspaper stories on Sunday morning just to sort of get a glimpse, as my father used to, of the high tragedy that is a University of Alabama football loss. And, I mean, it was ugly. Things like, we paid $28 million to get beat 21-14 by Louisiana Monroe. Heck! Mike Shula could have done that. That sort of thing. Really bitter. Really, really misplaced priorities. This is Alabama, of course, you know, talking about the Farm Bill a little bit ago. This is one of the places that was burned up by drought this last summer, where crops just withered in the fields for want of rain, where cattle farmers are having to sell off their herds because they don't have the hay to get them through the winter. but the real venom and vitriol was reserved for losing a football game to a perceived inferior. Well, that brings us to the pep talk delivered by $28 million football coach Nick Saban. He said during his weekly news conference, and I quote here, by the time I'm done, don't be near anything glass because you're going to want to put a brick through it or something. This is what Nick Saban said at his press conference. Quote, changes in history usually occur after some kind of catastrophic event. It may be 9/11, which sort of changed the spirit of America relative to catastrophic events. Pearl Harbor kind of got us ready for World War II or whatever. And that was a catastrophic event. And Nick Saban proceeded to equate the University of Alabama's defeat by the University of Louisiana Monroe this past Saturday, the 17th of November, with 9/11 and with Pearl Harbor. Please understand, I am just sickened by the repeated usage by Rudy Giuliani of 9/11 as a reason to elect him president. I have long been nauseated, well past healing, by the persistent use by the Bush administration of September the 11th, 2001. As some sort of benchmark of their competence. But I really guess that I hadn't plumbed the full depth of disgust that I could feel for someone waving the bloody shirt of September the 11th, 2001, until I got up this morning and saw this Associated Press story on the SportsIllustrated.com website. Holy cow. Now, football spokesman Jeff Purington had to come running out as soon as those bats flew out of Nick Saban's mouth. And he explained, and I quote, what Coach Saban said did not correlate losing a football game with tragedy. Everyone needs to understand that. He was not equating losing football games to those catastrophic events. The message was that true spirit and unity become evident in the most difficult of times. Those were two tremendous examples that everyone can identify with. Jeff Purington, buddy, I don't know how much they're paying you there at the U of Alabama, there at what we lovingly refer to as the Capstone, and where at I was once upon a student, once upon a time. But buddy, they didn't pay, apparently, no matter how much they're paying you, they never got around to teaching you the first law of wholes. Mr. Purington, Jeff, buddy, pal, my friend. Because, Mr. Purington, my friend, the first law of wholes says when you're in one, stop digging. Because you didn't make your boss's words any more palatable. And the whole, you know, the whole reference to 9/11 and Pearl Harbor is pretty obnoxious. I think about that memorial in Pearl Harbor, that white curved memorial that sits over the sunken remains of the USS Arizona. I think about the fact that the USS Arizona remains the only sunken American warship that remains commissioned. Because she still has her crew aboard, and you cannot decommission a warship until it has been relieved of its crew. A permanent oil slick rises from the bottom of Pearl Harbor, where the Arizona rests with her crew. Just as it has every day since that day that will live in infamy, December 7th, 1941, at approximately, 7:30 in the morning Honolulu time? When flags were first being raised, reveille first being blown, mamas, daddies, children headed off to church on a Sunday morning. When Japanese torpedo planes and bombers and fighters swept in on a military that was caught unawares, on the folks who made the Navy go, the seamen first class, the seamen second class, the seamen third class, the chief petty officers, and sent the USS West Virginia, the USS Tennessee, the USS Oklahoma, the USS Utah, the USS Nevada, the USS West Virginia to the bottom of Pearl Harbor, and most horrifically, the USS Arizona. That's the kind of thing that runs through my mind when I read the comments of a $28 million football coach who thinks getting his ass handed to him on a Saturday afternoon is the same as the beginning of a world war. Alabamians are a pretty patriotic lot. My best friend's father was in the D-Day invasion. There are a lot of those people there. I wonder if they will tolerate this from Nick Saban. If I was the president of the University of Alabama, it would be a no-brainer. I would pick up the phone. I would call Coach Nick Saban and say, "Buddy, you're out of a job. And don't try to sue us on your contract, because you just violated the morals clause." Changes in history usually occur after some kind of catastrophic event. It may be 9/11, which sort of changed the spirit of America relative to catastrophic events. Pearl Harbor kind of got us ready for World War II, or whatever, and that was a catastrophic event. All this in preparation for discussing the coming game Saturday, commonly referred to as the Iron Bowl, down on the plains of Lee County, Alabama, not far from Opelika, at Jordan-Hare Stadium at Auburn University. Yes, I am an alumnus of the University of Alabama. Yes, I am a fan of the Crimson Tide. But no, it would not bother me one iota if the Crimson Tide never won another football game as long as Nick Saban remains the head coach there. Do you remember when Ward Churchill made his comment about Little Eichmann's relative to September 11th? He was basically quoting Hannah Arendt's work and right-wingers from Alabama to Idaho cried out for him to be flayed alive and his beating heart ripped out of his body in the public square so that they could watch and enjoy. I am waiting to see what the response of the right-wingers is to Nick Saban. By the way, I have a reason for feeling an especial level of shame. It is, I think the word that Kurt Vonnegut coined for this sort of thing is FOMA. It's a sort of fake relationship that is only perceived but doesn't actually exist. Maybe it was a Granfaloon. Maybe it was a Wompeter. I can't remember. But I think it was FOMA. I have a particular reason for being especially disgusted with this comment because you know how dearly I love this state where I live. These hills, these hollers, their streams, their people. Nick Saban is a West Virginian. And I grieved. Lord God, I grieved when I saw that today, and I thought, you know, I can't get away with telling this story and not telling them that Nick Saban's a West Virginian. We take pride in our successes, and we also point out our failures. A Saban spokesman, that would be Mr. Purington, said the coach chose the 9/11 and Pearl Harbor references to illustrate the challenges facing his team. You know, it's so funny. I wish we were doing video right now. I lit a cigarette. But I've got my little butane lighter in my hand, and I just noticed that in the course of describing this story to you, I have gripped it almost to the point of I fear I would burst it, and my knuckles are absolutely gone white. Because it's not just the comparison of 9/11 and Pearl Harbor to a football game. It's the extra stuff he said. 9/11, which sort of changed the spirit of America. You know, that's like the Great Fire of London sort of creating a housing crisis. That's like an earthquake sort of making the earth move. So there's that. But then the heart of it is the heart of it, oh Jesus, the heart of it is the Pearl Harbor part. Pearl Harbor kind of got us ready for World War II. Well, there's the kind of part, and that goes through me like a knife. I don't often have occasion to say that I'm glad my dad's not around. I'm glad my dad's not around for this one. Because that would have, it would have killed him. It would have flat killed him. I would have read this story and I would have had to hang out in the house, and every time he tried to click over to ESPN, I'd have, hey dad, look at that, and bang, back to the fashion channel. Oh, Dad, I'm sorry, all the newspapers were sold out today. You can't, nope. Pearl Harbor kind of got us ready for World War II. And then the other reference to World War II. Pearl Harbor kind of got us ready for World War II, or whatever. You know, the massacre of American POWs at Malmedy. Or whatever. You know, the rape of Nanking. Or whatever. You know, the dropping of atomic weapons on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Or whatever. You know, the Battle of the Bulge. And the siege of Bastogne, and General McAuliffe telling a German commander nuts when he was demanded to surrender. Or whatever. The landing at Anzio, or whatever. The Battle of El Alamein, or whatever. My two uncles that I never got to know because they were long asleep under 6 feet of earth. Or whatever. God damn you, Nick Saban. The University of Alabama says it's a university that prides itself on its tradition and its honor. If it has any honor, Nick Saban should be out of a job as of about 12 hours ago. Newsflash, he ain't. And he won't be. Because he needs to take the University of Alabama on to a national championship. Or whatever. Let's see if this person I have unfortunately made to wait is still with us. Nope, that's a busy signal. So, you know, pardon my little sports moment tonight. I've had a lot of fun watching the national championship chase this year because it's been a heck of a college football season. And college football has changed because now the Woody Hayeses and Bo Schembechlers and Bear Bryants of the world can't just snap up every kid with an ounce of talent and sit them on the bench to make sure nobody else gets them. Real parity has come to the game now. And yeah, Appalachian State can go to Ann Arbor and beat mighty Michigan. And yeah, Louisiana Monroe can go to Tuscaloosa and beat Alabama. And once humble Kentucky can take out LSU in triple overtime. And the former laughingstock of the Big 12 can be 10-0. For the first time ever in its history. The last time it was 9-0, Kansas, was 1909. For somebody who enjoys the game, it's pretty fun to watch. But then along comes a dirtbag and a bigot and an egomaniac like Nick Saban and spits on the grave of my relatives and the fathers and grandfathers of my friends and the memories of heroism and sacrifice and trivializes the most horrific day in the recent memory of the United States of America. You know, I've probably done more with this story than I should have. But I'll be damned if I was going to let the night go by and not share this with you. So, you know, you tell me. If you were the president of the University of Alabama, would you have picked up the phone the minute you heard the words and just gotten rid of this horse's ass? And if you wouldn't have, why not? What I think I'm trying to get at is that there is an institutional, you know, I started out the program this evening saying I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. Every blessed day, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. I read stories like that and I wonder if it's already dropped. I wonder if, you know, the curtain's already been rung down and I just don't see it. Are we just perma-screwed when we tolerate that kind of stuff? Yeah, oh, free speech, sure. He can say whatever dumbass things he wants to say. But Lord, do the people of the state of Alabama have to pay him to say them? Does he get a nickname from now on? Pearl Harbor Saban? Sorta Saban? Kinda Saban? Whatever Saban? Or we'll all be forgiven next season if he can just go 12-0 and return a national championship to the capstone. What's less, will it all be okay if he can just beat Auburn this Saturday? And you know, as a coach, he engages in recruiting. It's not like the pros where you draft out of college. He's got to have assistant coaches who go hither, thither, and yon, looking at every last player, at every last little 1A high school at, you know, Busted Knuckle Junction, because I heard they got a hell of a tailback down there. And you go in and you sit in Mama and Daddy's living room and you say, you know, we're going to take care of your boy. He's got a lot of talent. We'd be mighty proud to have him in the program. Because, you know, you found out that he runs a 4.35 40, and that kind of speed just doesn't come down the pike every day. And that recruit, you think about the kid on the team who was second string, who didn't run the 4.35 40, but ran the 4.66 40. And there's no capstone in his future. No, when graduation was over, he had one choice. So he made the call to the recruiter and he signed up, and the next thing you knew, there was a guy in full dress uniform on a porch somewhere in some little corner county of Alabama, gloves in his hand, saying, "Ma'am, I'm sorry to be here. I hate to have to tell you this." And, you know, I guess in Nick Saban's world, that would sort of upset the parents or whatever. All this stuff has more meaning than what we attach to it immediately. I read this story this morning and sat there and went, holy... And then I read it again, and I read it again, and I read it again, and it kept just burrowing into my head like some sort of icky thing from a Star Trek movie, you know, the one where Chekhov says, "Captain, it was terrible. They put things in our ears." And by the time I get around to 6 p.m. Eastern time, and I've got it in the stack, and I'm saying to myself, you know, I'm not going to let this one go, because, no, it's not Scotty McClellan saying that, you know, he admits that he participated in misleading the American people, and that, you know, he had the president and the vice president doing the arm twisting on him to make him do it, and that those two suborned and connived at giving false statements to the American people. No, it's not on the same level with that. It's not an impeachable offense. Of course, if it was an impeachable offense, I'm sure that Nancy Pelosi would tell us that impeachment was off the table for Nick Saban because she wanted to consolidate power for 2008. No, it's none of that. But sometimes there are stories that reveal a sort of snapshot of our national character. And I think this is one of those. When $28 million buys you the right to stand in front of a bunch of beat sports reporter from the Birmingham News and the Tricycle Daily and the Anniston Gazette and the Huntsville Times and Montgomery Advertiser and blithely tell these sports reporters that losing to the University of Louisiana Monroe is almost as awful as a sneak attack on Pearl Harbor or a terrorist attack on the Commercial Center of New York and the Defense Center of Washington, D.C. That's what 28 million big ones will buy you in America. So I hope I haven't worn the thing out, and you're free to tell me to move on. But sometimes it just... just kind of crawls all over you. Let's check out who's on the phone here. Hi, who have I got?
Hey there, Ben Birch.
Hey, Ben. How are you?
Oh, I am in a world of pain.
I didn't tell anybody on the air about what went down. I figured you might want to do it yourself. I don't like the gossip.
Oh, yeah. I was going to get some coffee this afternoon and stepped on the dog dish. And I wound up doing like a ballerina tile style split all the way to the ground.
Ugh.
Just straight down. And I'm telling you, when I played football and rugby and fence years ago, I couldn't do that. And I thought I had broken my hip, and it felt like it. And they got me to the ER, and after a long wait, they finally got me some pain meds and got some x-rays. And it turns out I just sprained everything in the back of my leg.
You know the old saying, in many instances, a sprain is far worse than a break.
Oh, yeah, I know, because back when I had my car wreck, what happened to me was I dislocated both feet.
Ow.
What they call a subtalar dislocation, where both feet were dislocated and laying on their side interior to the leg.
Yeah.
And that was pretty bad. I couldn't walk for 7 months.
This was worse?
No, this just hurts.
Well, did they give you some good pain meds to help, or...
I am right now on 30 milligrams of Valium and a big shot of Dilaudid and some Vicodin.
And you still got pain?
Oh, yeah.
You know, just when you were describing what you did, it sounds like the kind of thing that I would do. And the idea of doing a full split it just happened again. Little shivers run up my spine. Ugh.
Yeah, it really hurt.
A lot.
And I'm really out of it. So before I say something horribly stupid on the air, I'm going to sign off.
Okay, well, are you...
I mean, I might even just admit to something like, you know, I was on the overpass and did JFK, you know.
Yeah, let's don't do that. That gets you a visit.
Yeah, you know. That's okay. I buried the AK-47 long ago. We'll never find it.
Ben, hang in there. I'm sorry it happened.
You take care.
All right, later.
Bye.
Ben Birch, you know, I knew about this, but I didn't tell you guys because, like I said, I don't like to gossip. But you know, that I don't kid when I say that Ben is the hardest working man in liberal talk, because he is. And then to have this happen, ow! I mean, guys, from the guys in the room, just the guys, just the guy side of the room, can I have a collective ow? Now, ladies, yeah, ow! So I'm hoping he's got a good prescription and, you know, can, you know, hammer the Motrin and all the other goodies for a while. I can't imagine how that hurts. And by the way, you know, coming up this evening at about 11 p.m. Eastern Time, between 11 and midnight, we will have our second edition of the Horn Section, moderated by yours truly. Hopefully we'll have some members of the horn community leap in, share their thoughts. Sorry to be such a college football geek, but like I said, once in a while you just run across the occasional story that makes you just want to stand there and do some full-on screaming, and for me that was one of them. I can well imagine that Paul Bear Bryant was probably screaming in the dirt. And I was doing everything in my power not to scream. For those of you who were hoping for some other story, well, you should have called in and brought it to my attention. I am going to finish off with one dandy. the Department of Defense has a policy, you know, there's always a policy, that insists that Iraq war veterans pay back signing bonuses if they don't stay in the service as long as they signed up to. Seems reasonable. Sounds kind of like breach of contract, doesn't it? You know, you sign on for another 4 years and they give you an extra $30,000, and then, you know, somehow or another I want out now. Well, you know, you pay the money back. Pay back the 30 large. Sell the boat and pay back the 30 large. There's only one problem. We're dealing with the Bush administration Department of Defense, the Bush administration Pentagon. And the Pentagon is demanding these repayments from veterans who can't serve out their contracts because they were maimed beyond their ability to serve while deployed in Iraq. I'm not kidding. Congressman Jason Altmaier of Pennsylvania, a Democrat, is trying to fix the problem. The problem was only uncovered by a presidential commission. The Pentagon didn't even realize it had a problem. Just like that kid, the tailback who ran the 4.56 instead of the 4.35. How many have suffered and been tormented before this was brought to anybody's attention? Waiting for the other shoe to drop. Jesus Christ. Hey, who have I got?
Hi, Bob. This is Phil in Daytona Beach.
Yeah, Phil, what's up?
Well, I think the Pentagon should be paying us back the $2.3 trillion that was announced missing and unaccounted for on September 10th, 2001. You were mentioning 9/11 before.
Yeah.
And God knows how many. It was check the news, people. Do a Google.
Or maybe the $9 billion they say they lost in the sofa of the Coalition Provisional Authority. That's
yes,
a start.
But $2.3 trillion with a T was announced. Google it. September 10th, Rumsfeld announced 2001, and there's up to $4 trillion missing now since these bastards have been in the White House, and we need them to pay that back.
Shore up the food stamp budget with a little bit of that? Have some health care for all Americans?
We need these bastards. I am just so tired of waiting for the American people to get off their asses, Bob.
Well, at this point, if the polling data is to be believed, Phil, it's not the American people you have to wait on anymore.
Yes, it is. Because
the American people have said clearly in a poll in the last week that George Bush and Dick Cheney should be impeached and should be removed from office. By more than a bare majority.
Bob, anyone can answer a poll. We got to get off our asses. You know, the problem is, Bob, the missing link to this whole equation is the people not demand. Frederick Douglass, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did and never will. The difference between now and in years past when we had social change in this country is the people got off their asses and went out in the street and demanded it. We've had the same first couple on the dance floor for about 6 years now waiting for the rest of the tables to join in. And that's the missing link, Bob. Power. The power has co-opted our representatives in Washington, both Democrats and Republicans. Impeachment off the table. That's obstruction of justice at the highest level. These guys.
Well, that was the question that I asked to open the program. Is it mandatory upon the House of Representatives to begin impeachment proceedings when they see the president committing high crimes and misdemeanors?
Well, there is something called misprision of treason, which I know the, you know, and again, please, folks, don't let 9/11 truths hang you up from looking at stuff that they come up with that helps us all. DC911truth.org has a section on misprision of treason, meaning that if you are made aware, a government representative is made aware of a treasonous offense, and they don't act on it, they are basically subject to federal law with treason, you know. I don't know if it's up to 7 years in federal prison or what, but it makes them accountable. And I look at everything, Bob. I don't close myself off to anything. You know, I look at stuff, and if I can get something that'll help us take these bastards down and give us our country back, I look at it, and then with it, if it's something that's not being talked about, I'll call into a show like yours and mention it. Hopefully,
sure,
others will look,
sure,
at it. But I think all these senators and congressmen need to pay us back the money we've been paying them. And isn't there somebody who's running for Congress said that if he gets elected, if they don't pass universal health care, he's going
to... No, that was John Edwards who said if he gets to be president, he'll cut it off.
Yeah. Oh, is that right?
Yeah, Phil, we're out of time. I wish you'd called in earlier.
Hey, I like that attitude, and if we can get the rest of us to turn the damn TV off and give,
yep,
at least an hour or two a week...
Gotta go, Phil.
Active. Thanks, Bob.
See ya. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye. Thanks. I hate hustling people off the air, but, you know, the show ends when the show ends. So thanks, everybody. Get well soon, Ben Birch. Up next...